Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This week, survivors of the deadly Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in Florida brought their summer bus tour to Iowa. Let's talk with three students involved in the March for Our Lives campaign about their push for stricter gun control measures and how their message is being received here in Iowa and in other parts of the country. Joining us by phone, Ryan and Matt Deitch. Ryan is a survivor of the Parkland, Florida massacre. Matt is his older brother, a college student, one of the organizers of March for Our Lives, and Kobe Lofton is a March for Our Lives activist. Ryan, Matt, Kobe, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
So how has the reception been for your message for stricter gun control measures? What have you been hearing from the people you're talking with?
This is Ryan. Most of the people that we've been talking with have been very receptive. They've been very willing to listen, as our primary objective is to, with this tour, expand voter education and voter registration all across the country. And it really shows that people are very active politically. People are becoming very active as they see a lot of their problems are affecting them every day. With the problem of gun violence, affects all of us in this country, and we need to make sure that people are safe, as this is a public health issue.
Mm-hmm. So voter education, voter registration, you're looking for the 2018 midterms. Specifically, what? Do you have certain representatives, certain members of Congress that you're looking at to oust?
This is Matt. I just want to say that we are looking to obtain morally just leaders in this country. When it comes to gun violence in this country, the United States accounts for 80% of the world's gun violence. We see more deaths because of guns than any other nation in this world. And for the most part, these are preventable. We can put laws into place that would save countless lives. And the reason that these laws aren't being passed is because we have morally unjust leaders in office. People have accepted bribes, people who take money in order to block this legislation. On Fox News the other day, one of the leaders of the Illinois NRA said that these policies that we're promoting would save lives. And then when asked why they're blocking it, he said that it's because this is freedom, these are gun rights. If we are choosing the rights of guns over the rights of children in order to stay alive, then we are making the wrong choice. We can have the Second Amendment and still save lives. And that's why we're out here educating people on these policies, because none of which affect the Second Amendment. They don't infringe upon anyone's rights. And to think that a gun has more rights than a child in school is ridiculous.
Are you saying that any of our leaders, our elected leaders, who support gun rights, as they would put it, are morally unjust? Is it that black and white of an issue?
I think for the most part, when we're talking about gun rights, that's extremely vague. What we're promoting is simply something as simple as not allowing domestic abusers to obtain weapons. When a gun is present in a domestic abuse case, the fatality rate goes up 500%. That is an astronomical number in regards to how many people are being killed, how many women are being killed in their homes in a domestic abuse case. And so when you have elected officials like I'm trying to blank. What's his name? I'm sorry.
Rod Blum is our congressman in the 1st District of Iowa.
Rod said in a survey that he would support repealing the part in the state law that says that domestic abusers are barred from obtaining guns. And domestic abuse is the number one indicator that someone will commit another violent crime and is a violent individual. And so disarming domestic abusers is a huge step forward in preventing massacres in the future.
You, I understand your group protested at another of Iowa's congressman's office in northwest Iowa at a stop in Sioux City. This was a protest at the office of Congressman Steve King, 4th District Congressman. What did you do during the protest?
This is Kobe. So before we went to the office, we gathered with many people in Sioux City, and we created signs. And then we rode the bus, and we marched over to the office. We went inside. We tried to speak with one of his clerks, and she spoke with us first, and then she started rejecting our questions and concerns. She stepped out, and then she made everyone get out, and then we tried to go back in, and she blankly disregarded everything we wanted to say. So we all just sat there for about 5 hours waiting for her to accept at least one of us to go in. She did not, and we just had to leave once the building closed.
I understand the students, you also demonstrated with what's called a die-in?
Yes, this is Matt. We had a few students enter the room, and she said that she was not here to talk about personal attacks. And Steve King, the representative whose office we were in, had personally attacked Emma and has actually stood by those attacks.
Emma Gonzalez, one of the members of your group.
Yes, Emma Gonzalez, my dear friend, who when we had March for Our Lives, one of the largest public demonstrations in American history, instead of taking any of our policies and talking about any of those, he simply attacked her for being of Cuban descent. And when we brought that up in this office, she said that we're not here to talk about personal attacks. And she defended her boss's stance. And then a 10-year-old boy from Iowa, from Sioux City, said, can we talk about policy? And she goes, yes, I'm here to talk about policy. And he goes, okay, I want to talk about universal background checks and how those could be put in place. This 10-year-old who reads the New York Times and is heavily educated on this, who has been talking about this. He's met with multiple governors, apparently. Apparently, he's like a local legend. And Will Langston said, can we talk about universal background checks? And this woman said, no, I'm not here to talk about policy. So the two sentences back-to-back that she said is, I want to talk about policy, and then, no, I'm not here to talk about policy. And then she locked the door on us once she had security escort a bunch of these kids out. And then another constituent who wasn't a part of our initial demonstration tried to go in and say, look, I agree with these kids. I voted in this district, and I can vote in this next election. I want to talk about this issue. And she never once opened the door or said anything. Mm-hmm. And then we sat there outside the office as a die-in, and we had 17 candles lit in the shape of a 17 for the 17 victims of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting. And we waited there until they escorted us out of the building when the building closed. On the other hand, my brother, who I want him to talk about this, went to Senator Grassley's office. Steve King knew we were coming. We told them heads up ahead of time that we were going to come and request a meeting. So they had days' notice, but Grassley, on the other hand, did not. I want my brother to talk more about how that happened.
Okay, Ryan?
Yeah, this is Ryan. So basically, myself and Alfonso Calderon, another member of March for Our Lives who went to Marjory Stoneman Douglas, we both went into Senator Grassley's office as we realized he was right down the hall, and he had two assistants in there working on a lot of casework, a lot of immigration issues. Actually, a few Nigerian men came in and actually dealt with some casework for them, and they were dealing with naturalization process. But so we sat down to talk about issues of gun violence, issues of just that the constituents had been dealing with, that the people of Iowa had told us had been issues in the past, and they were very receptive. We wrote down all our issues. We wrote down our contact information, and we're waiting to hear back from the D.C. office. As you can see, Senator Grassley, he has a staff that is actually willing to listen to people, especially people who aren't so much his constituency. I mean, me and Alfonso are residents of South Florida, and they were fully ready to listen to all of our complaints and actually gave reasoning as to the senator's belief system when it comes to gun violence, when it comes to all these issues. They actually gave solid answers that are fairly public, but still, Steve King's staff were very not receptive. This woman thought that we were just there to badger her when, in fact, we brought up several of the legitimate concerns. And she instead locked the door and had police escort her out of the building after it closed, which, in my defense, I said that it was a waste of taxpayer money for this woman to use a police escort system when children were just asking her questions.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us on this broadcast of River to River, I have three guests via phone, Ryan and Matt Deitch, Kobe Lofton also. They are three students involved in the March for Our Lives campaign, and they're on a bus tour in Iowa this week. Ryan is a survivor of the Parkland, Florida massacre. There's a recent Iowa poll, gentlemen, that shows only 40% of Iowans believe that stricter gun laws will result in fewer mass shootings. 56% say stricter gun laws will not prevent mass shootings. What would you say to someone in that 56% category to change their minds?
This is Matt. I would very much implore them to go on our website, marchforourlives.com, and click the tab How We Save Lives. On that tab, there are 10 individual policies that go into detail about how they work, what they do, how they're constitutional, and you can hit the Read More button, and it'll tell you which states they've been implemented in and how they have saved lives. I think a big issue in this debate is that it's incredibly polarizing for people to say whether someone is pro-gun or anti-gun. I'm not anti-gun. I'm anti-gun violence. And I know that gun violence is happening all around the country and that there are ways that we can prevent gun violence without infringing upon anyone's rights. And that's what we need to talk about. We have to find out what we actually can agree on that can be put into place at the federal and state level to save lives. And I think for the most part, a lot of it just comes from a lack of education on those policies. I think people just draw the line between either pro-gun or anti-gun and don't actually look in between to see, okay, how can we come together and stop this these massacres from happening? Because in Santa Fe, there are two armed guards there and 10 people still died. There in Martyrstone and Douglas, there's someone with a gun and you don't know if someone's going to use it in that moment. The only way that we can actually stop these shootings from happening, if you look at what happened in Noblesville and at the Waffle House, is you have to disarm these people who are out there to kill people. James Shaw Jr. did not have a gun and was able to disarm this man and save lives. Four people still died, but he saved lives. The teacher in Indiana was able to disarm this person and save lives. If we can do that before they start open fire on our children, then we will save lives a lot easier.
So just to be clear, in a school setting, who in a school setting do you think should be armed?
I think if you have a trained security guard that goes through all these checks, like the bill in Florida says, then I think that is okay. But for the grand scheme of things, adding more guns to a situation does not make people more safe. It actually creates more harm than good.
Kobe,
I want to read. Studies have been done.
Kobe, I want to reach out to you because you joined the March for Our Lives. You're a resident of Chicago, I understand. Chicago, well known, unfortunately, for a tremendous amount of gun violence in recent years. Tell us about what we should know about gun violence in Chicago and Iowa and across the nation and why you're doing what you're doing.
So the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is because the fact that 147 children under the age of 21 in the last year was killed due to gun violence. I do this because I'm a people person, and I do not want to be a statistic of that fact. And what I need people to know is that because of Indiana and because of the people that's pro-gun laws up in Iowa, that these guns are bought legally up in Indiana and Iowa, and then they are sold illegally in Chicago. And because of that, we are losing too many children every day, and we have to live through this every day. Just think about the number of the people who have been killed due to gun violence over the age of 21. That's completely insane.
Let's go back to connecting, because you're in the business of changing minds. How do you connect with someone? Perhaps you can recall an instance along this tour, someone who believes, that having guns is enshrined in the Constitution, that having more people armed means a safer society rather than a less safe society, and people that say that any law that infringes on that right is a threat.
This is Ryan. I was actually at a town hall in Omaha, Nebraska, and at that town hall, there were several people who were very not receptive to our ideas. They were very much a pro no more regulations than we currently have. And I spoke to one of them afterwards, And he was actually very receptive to what I was saying, as he spouted off many facts that I called incorrect because they simply were. One thing he said is that the background check system is consistent across all 50 states, which it's not. In fact, in the state of Kansas, you can get a gun without going through any such checks for the most part. And those permits that Kansas gives out are accepted in 36 other states in this union. And to have a system in which one state gives very few regulations and it affects 36 other states in the union, it affects countless lives. And that those things were very understandable from his point of view. And in fact, we exchanged numbers. I've been talking to him for the past few days. And just overall, like, we've seen that people who don't so much agree with us can overall agree that people should not be dying like this, and we can work together to find common sense solutions.
So it sounds like you feel there is common ground. I don't know if it's enough common ground. Do you think our political discussion in this country, the state of our politics, would allow for some common ground to develop into a law that most people can agree on?
This is Matt. The polling shows that over 97% of people agree that we need universal background checks. The number one reason against wanting universal background checks is the idea that we already have them. That is false. So if the number one thing standing in the way of something is the idea that it already exists and it doesn't, that shows that we just need the education tools out there to say, look, there are holes in this system. Domestic abusers in multiple states can still obtain weapons, even though there's a federal law that says that they shouldn't be able to, because these states have politicians that are bought and paid for by the NRA, and they're blocking policies that they admit save lives. And so if we can say that these policies will save lives, then they need to be put into place. And if we have taken them to federal courts, and we've seen that they're constitutional. Something that I very much struggle with is that people who are responsible gun owners should stand up with this, and a lot of them stand up for this, because they say if they're a responsible gun owner, then they do not want irresponsible people to give them a bad name. They don't want these people going around with guns and killing people. If I'm buying a gun to protect myself, why would I want someone that is a violent individual that has a proven violent history to be able to get a gun and put my life at risk? Why would I want that situation to arise? We do not want to create more violent situations. We want to try and bring peace and love to this country because it's very much needed.
I wonder, I'm sure you're aware that donations to the NRA have increased substantially since the start of the year. The massacre at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School was in the middle of February, but the NRA has received a flood of donations. How do you feel knowing that you may be mobilizing not only your side, we'll say, of this debate, but both sides of the debate?
I think, this is Matt again. I think that it's incredibly important that people are voicing their opinions, because that way we can have the tough conversation. But I think very much the donations are coming from a place of fear, that these people fear that their rights are going to be taken away, and that is very much not the case. We are not fighting to take away anyone's rights away. We're fighting to put policies in place that will actively save lives and not infringe on anyone's rights. And so for the most part, the NRA creates this propaganda that is used to stir up fear and create this narrative that this is a political debate. This isn't a left or a right issue. We're talking about saving lives. I want people on both sides of the aisle to adopt these policies and say, look, we understand that this is not going to infringe on anyone's rights and this is going to save lives. But the problem is that these politicians will admit that these policies will save lives. I have been in hundreds of political offices in Congress where these congressmen have said, yes, we would support this if it came to a vote. We'd support this if it came to a vote. But when the Republican National Convention takes $30 million from the NRA, that's not a donation. That's a bribe. That is hush money. They're being told by this gun group to not do anything that would obstruct the sale of their guns. When the NRA takes kickbacks from gun manufacturers, some gun manufacturers will give them 5-10% of some of their sales. That's not a donation. That's not contributing something. That is a commission. They are salespeople at that point. They do not work for their members. Over 80% of the NRA members want universal background checks. So why don't we have them in our country?
School shootings have not been in our headlines recently. How do you, as a group trying to mobilize public opinion, counter the tendency for school shootings, as horrendous as they are, to fade more and more quickly from headlines and from people's thoughts?
Well, this is Ryan. I mean, some statistics that have come around is about 97 people die a day due to gun violence in this country. And roughly as of now, there's been about one mass school shooting a week. And that just isn't an acceptable statistic. And as you said, like, it's not so much in the media, and I can see why, because the media doesn't like repetition. The media doesn't like to replay the same thing over and over again. I mean, when it comes to some of these shootings, like the Stoneman Douglas shooting was covered extensively, but when it came to something like the Santa Fe shooting down in Texas, they were covered for roughly a week, maybe even less, due to things like the royal wedding and other obstructing things. I mean, I can look up today that there were a few shootings earlier today. There were shootings yesterday and the day before that. They don't make the news as much because people just simply don't want to see the same carnage every day. But sometimes you just have to show them it to actually make them act.
Well, winding up our conversation here, I wanted you to leave us with a few thoughts about while on this tour in other parts of the country and now here in Iowa, what have the meetings, the town halls, the discussions with Iowans and other Americans revealed to you about the nature of our contentious national gun violence debate that you didn't know before you set out on this bus tour?
This is Kobe. It's great because we meet some very inspiring people who are definitely educated, and it's amazing to see how people see things from different views and people have different points, and we all share the same goal. However, we do have some people who are against what we say, but they still have a civil conversation with us and not argue with us.
This is Matt. Yeah, very much. I think a lot of these areas that we've gone to early on this tour, we did not expect the reception that we got. We did not expect in Kansas City to have over 1,300 people at our town hall and to have tens of thousands of people watch live on television. And we had several elected officials and people running for public office from both parties in the attendance. And I think a lot of minds have been changed, because when you really get into the nitty-gritty, when you really get into the nuances of these policies and you realize who they're actually affecting, and when you actually see that lives will be saved and that these policies do not infringe upon law-abiding gun owners and they are not, quote-unquote, taking away anyone's rights or taking away anyone's guns, I think we did change a lot of minds. And if people want to get more involved with the road to change, they can text CHANGE to 97779 to see where we're going on the road, what we're doing next. Because every day we're sort of adding things, and we're adding town halls and different events just to have this conversation longer.
Okay, thank you very much, all three of you, Matt Deitch and your brother Ryan Deitch, Kobe Lofton, on a bus tour now in Iowa, three students involved in the March for Our Lives campaign. Thank you very much, Kobe, Matt, and Ryan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. This is a very important conversation.
When we come back after a short break, we'll revisit a few best-of NewsBuzz conversations from earlier this year. Political scientist Dave Anderson of ISU tells us the implications of millennials dethroning boomers as the largest voting bloc. We remember when the first U.S. satellite was launched into space 60 years ago, and we'll hear from two UI students who attended rocket school in Norway. I'm Ben Kiefer, back with your NewsBuzz edition of River to River after this short break. This is Iowa Public Radio News.